Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 73. What if your father was lost in a shipwreck?
As a kid, I always adored my father. He was kind of like a dad who could fix anything. He was always tinkering with something. He had a shop in the garage, and it was just like exploding with tools and different projects. Outside of like the shop and fixing things, he was always fishing all the time. He would bring home fish. He loved lake fishing, he loved ocean fishing, any kind of vacation we took as a family, there had to be a water nearby. Even though I didn't adore fishing, I loved going out on the boat with my brother and my dad. I got seasick pretty much guaranteed every time I went, and I would go, I would get sick, and then I would keep fishing. It was just like, it was so much fun to be out, like you're away from everything else. Isolated with your family and your buddies, whoever you're there with. And it was kind of like being part of the boys club, getting to do all the stuff that my brother got to do, and being treated like, you know, one of the guys. If you put in the time and you have the patience and you have the skill and you know where the fish are and you know what lures to use and you know what days to go, like, it's all of this knowledge that he gained over decades of fishing. All of that would come together when you had a successful day. And there were a lot of days when he would come home and they didn't get anything. I was probably the mellowest of the four of us. There was a lot of tumultuousness between my brother and my mom and my dad, so I was always the kid who was kind of trying to stay out of trouble. But aside from that, we were pretty close. That's one thing I really miss, is like our family unit seems to feel like it's missing a piece. My dad was the kind of person who wasn't overly verbose, and someone who you always wanted to get more out of all the time. And I felt that way too. Like, I always wanted like more of my dad. When I was in high school, he had a liver transplant. He had hepatitis C. And they think that he may have gotten it from injections, because his dad was in the military and all the kids had medical treatment through the military. He started to get really sick and he was like losing energy. He had actually retired early because he was too sick to keep working. One night my mom says, "We're going to the hospital, there's a liver. We're getting a transplant." And I was like, I didn't even know that he was sick. I didn't know what was going on. He went and had the transplant, and he, maybe after 3 months, he was walking a little bit. And after 6 months, he was like lively again, and then pretty much getting better. As I was finishing high school, I went to UC Berkeley. And I'm really glad that my dad was able to see me graduate from college. He was doing some experimental medical treatments, and it ended up succeeding in totally eliminating the virus, which is pretty fabulous. And then, like, before you knew it, he was fishing like never before. And it felt like he had a real second chance at life. And then he went, you know, on this trip. So that summer, I was leaving a job and starting a new job. I had, I think, a week or two off that I was going to spend at my mom's house since my dad was leaving for this trip to Mexico. My mom's side of the family is French. My dad's side is Filipino. So there's a French club in the San Francisco Bay Area that gets together and has parties all the time. They have picnics, they have dinners, and they roast lamb and have giant picnics. And I wished him well for his trip. And I remember thinking, even before he went on the trip, I emailed him and I said, like, at some point, I want to go on one of these trips to Mexico. Like, it sounds like so much fun. He was like, yeah, okay, sometime I'll take you. every season it would change. My dad would get closer to different coworkers or neighbors and friends, and sometimes their kids. So it was like an evolving group of fishermen. Usually he got closest to whoever was also retired. They had been down to Mexico a few times. They had been on this specific boat once before, so they knew what to expect. They knew that the boat was not well equipped with like safety precautions, and you know, they didn't have a lot of confidence in the crew members, but at the same time they didn't really anticipate anything as wild as this happening. I think it was the evening of July 3rd, I get a phone call, or my mom gets a phone call from our neighbor who says, like, the ship capsized. And I'm like, what? This can't be real. It was 2:30 in the morning when the ship went down, but we didn't hear from them until the next morning, really. We didn't get any news until some of the survivors were picked up. And so we go into a frenzy looking for all the contact information from all the people on the trip and all their families. We don't know who has been accounted for. We don't know who has been found at this point. We haven't heard any news about my dad. I have no idea. And I'm doing this crazy thing, which is calling his cell phone. Like, I wasn't really thinking about what happened. When I first got the news and I thought of the possibility that, like, my dad might not come back, I wasn't sure if I would ever laugh again, if I would smile again, if I would ever, like, have fun again, which now sounds ridiculous, but, like, that was a serious thought that went through my mind. Yeah, of course I'm gonna be able to, like, survive and continue. First, I was just like in shock. I didn't really think that this could be happening, and there was so little information that I kept imagining that he was just gonna come like trundling up the stairway and like we were gonna have no news and he would just appear. And then we got like phantom reports where the guys who were some guys who were picked up and were in transit to a hotel, they got a report that there were some guys also picked up in transit to the hotel. It was a report about themselves. So they were like, oh my God, there's six more guys they picked up. Like it was themselves. And so we, you know, sort of stopped trusting all the reports that we were getting. We don't know what to do. Like we're thousands of miles away. What can we do from our house? The first day went by and we ended up hearing, like getting a list of the people who were rescued. My dad wasn't on the list. Called my boyfriend and I told a few friends, like, we're just waiting. It was like a nightmare that could not be our own. You know, I've read shipwreck novels and it's crazy to think that this actually happened to the people that we know. I think the first few days, my brother, my mom, and I were just incredulous. And then those days kept coming and like there was still no news. I think I was trying not to hope for anything at that point because there was so much unreliable news. I was really just trying to wait and listen. And I kept calling his cell phone and it's crazy. Like everything went down. All of their wallets were at the bottom of the ocean. Nobody had their keys to their car and that kind of thing. Like, but I just kept calling it and thinking that he would, like, you know, pick up and I would hear from him. The guys who were picked up that we first heard from, they were not picked up by, like, emergency personnel or the Coast Guard. They were picked up by fishermen, and some of them swam to shore. Some of them got marooned on tiny islands. When the boat went down, no one was alerted. They didn't send out any sort of emergency signal. They barely even handed out life vests, to my knowledge. From what I understand, a lot of people only were able to float or survive because Jim detached this safety raft from the boat. So no one was prepared. I think if Jim hadn't told everyone that the ship was sinking, like, maybe there would only been Jim and a couple other guys, the crew members, the captain who survived, who would have survived. helicopters searching and searching and searching. And as time goes on, you know, you're like wondering, what are the chances like now? And like, are they getting slimmer? There was one body that was found, I think on the first or second day. And then there were seven more men who were missing. One thing that people kept saying was that the water temperature, they're really lucky that the water temperature is so warm and it increased the chances of anyone surviving for that long. But really, being out there in the elements, the sun, and not having any fresh water to drink, you know, after 3 days, we were kind of like losing hope. And I think some people were still holding out hope for quite a long time. But I didn't want to, none of us wanted to say to others that there was a time to stop hoping. I mean, you just never know. What if he's stuck on an island, you know? What if he's like found some water somewhere? And what if he's just standing somewhere sunburned waiting for someone to find him? One of the most terrifying things is like imagining different scenarios. And especially because they went down in the dark. And imagining if like his last moments were just like scared in the dark, floating by himself. I don't think I've ever seen my dad scared. So the thought of those being his last feelings is really upsetting. The other thing that is scary to me is how they all sort of got separated. You know, you're out there floating and like they couldn't all stay moored together, and they ended up losing the people who were nearby and at one point, and then they were just gone and they didn't know what happened to them. I know Charles Gibson told us his story a little bit. He was swimming, trying to get to shore, and found himself on an island. He thought he saw another person, was speaking to the person, and realized when he got up close it was a giant albatross bird, and he was having like a delusion. This is like stuff out of, you know, a shipwreck novel. And there's a photo out there that anytime I look up this story, it always comes up, and it's of the guys like in a helicopter right after they were picked up. And it's just so hard to look at because they're so sunburned and they're swollen from being in the water. And I mean, it's incredible that they did survive. A few of the wives came over to our house. Some of my dad's friends came over. Our neighbors came over and just like waited with us, waited for news. There was one man's wife who actually got the good news that we were waiting for while she was at our house and found out that her husband was picked up, and it was just like, are there going to be more? It was like a little breath. He went on so many fishing trips, he didn't like keep hours with us and tell us when he's kept coming back. We knew it was going to be like a long trip and he would just come back when he comes back. And he was always like bustling up through the garage with his lunch pack and cooler and all this stuff. And we'd hear him like tromping up the stairs. And I just thought that might be what happened. I kept replaying this noise in my head, and I wasn't sure if it was real, like of him slamming the garage door. And then it just never happened. I don't really know how long it took me to like realize that he wasn't coming back. I kind of lost track of time. It was July, then I just felt like it was beautiful out and the weather was like a mockery of what was going on. Like every single day was beautiful after that. So what helped, I guess, was hearing from the survivors, and I know it was really hard for them, but it was important to hear it from the guys who were there. Basically, what happened was the boat started to take on water, and they had a few of the holds that hold fish and other supplies were open, and those started to fill up with water. And the Panga boat started to fill up with water. Usually they're overturned, but because they weren't overturned, they were filling up with water and weighing down the boat. And it started to take on water on one end, and then it just started to list. And Jim was telling me, like, in a matter of minutes, It was about to sink. He was able to notify some of the rooms and not all of them. And the guys grabbed what they could. Some of them grabbed life vests, some of them didn't. And they jumped off the boat for the most part. There was a storm, it was a pretty violent storm. But as Jim was telling me, it wasn't something that was unmanageable. If the ship had stayed perpendicular to the waves, it wouldn't have taken on all that water. There were so many things that could have been avoided. So the pongas overturned, the holds that were open, having an emergency alert system, having radioed for help, having even alerted the passengers. Like, there were so many different steps that could have gone differently, and they didn't. After it went down, it was just pitch black, and they're out there, like, in the waves. And not knowing, like, you know, if there are sharks or what could be in the water around you, like, I hope that whatever happened, that it was over quickly. Kind of my worst fear is that he was just drifting out there by himself, floating on something and waiting and never got found. Like, that would be the worst. All of the families, after a certain point, became aware that their loved ones had perished. Some of the families became adamant that they needed to find the remains. So there was an effort to do that, and they sent divers down, and they did find the boat, and they found some of the remains of the people they were looking for. Part of the struggle was not having a death certificate, and for a long time he was not considered deceased. So there have been cases where people are lost at sea and then they end up being found, and an insurance company has already given whatever they were supposed to do, and this person came back from the dead, basically. So that was a struggle that my mom went through, but I kind of stayed out of that. I don't think there was a specific point where we gave up hope, but there was a point after which we could not keep hoping. Yeah, we had a memorial. We had a ton of my dad's friends from fishing, from work, just family friends. I put together a slideshow of photos, mostly fishing photos. So we gave out lures to a lot of his friends, as many people as we could, really, because we had so much fishing gear and we just thought that would be a good way for them to remember him. There were criminal charges brought against the captain for involuntary manslaughter, but one of the other pieces of that was that there were only two death certificates issued at the time, I think, when the charges were brought, so they were only charged with two counts. Yet there were eight who died. And I also learned that they were sort of being reclusive in their homes in Mexico. There were reports that, like, they weren't coming out of their houses and stuff because people all heard about this accident and they were seen as at fault. And I can't imagine the guilt that those people must have felt. At least I assume that's how they felt. But that's a pretty heavy weight to have on your shoulders. There's a very, very, very slim possibility that one of these guys is still alive. I mean, I kind of stopped giving any credence to that idea. But the hardest part is imagining, like, my dad's final moments. Like, I don't know if he was scared or if he felt like he had accomplished the things he wanted to in life or if he even had time for those sorts of thoughts. I do think that he led a really joyous life, and I'm really thankful that he had the liver transplant that he did, because he had a period of years that he otherwise wouldn't have where he got to do a lot of things that he loved. But, you know, he was cut way too short. He had a number of years where he had a great life, and I'm glad that he got to enjoy his retirement somewhat. But it makes me think about that, how he had a second chance, and then it kind of, like, he didn't get to use it fully. My brother and I were both grown, and we were both moved out of the house. So we were used to living without my parents. But I don't think my mom, I don't think she'll ever get used to living without my dad. I guess our family just feels sort of like it's so small now. And there's like a huge hole in it. And I think it'll always feel that way. It would be nice for me to have a nice closing point, but that's what there isn't in the story. Like, there's no nice closing point. There's no point of closure. Like, everyone's just kind of left hanging.